The Michael Duke Show.
I have two guns, one for each of you.
Firearms Friday.
As Thomas Jefferson stated, it is the right and duty of the people to be at all times armed.
Say hello to my little friend!
I say that the Second Amendment is, in order of importance, the First Amendment. The right to keep and bear arms is the one right that allows rights to exist at all.
The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Firearms.
From my cold, dead hands.
Friday.
Here's my rifle, here's my gun. This is for fighting, this is for fun.
Firearms Friday.
All right, welcome back to the program. It is Firearms Friday, your chance to sound off on issues of a two-way nature here on the program. It's the one day we dedicate to gun rights and the Second Amendment. Joining me right now is our guest, Dr. John Lott, who you may know as the author of the book More Guns, Less Crime. He's also the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. You can find them at crimeresearch.org. And his latest book is entitled Gun Control Myths: How Politicians, the Media, and Botched Studies Have Twisted the Facts on Gun Control. He talks with us this morning about those myths, about his latest book, about some of the things that are happening out there in the world, and this continual push to disarm American citizens when they themselves appear to want to be armed more and more. And he joins us. Good morning, Dr. Lott. Thanks for coming on board.
Oh, it's great to talk to you again. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I appreciate that. So first and foremost, you continue to try and debunk and demystify this for people. There is a constant battle with the mainstream media, with the entertainment industry and everything else in this kind of obfuscation of the real truth of gun rights. Tell us a bit about this this latest book that you just produced out last month. Give us some insight into what you cover in there and why you continue to extrapolate this stuff out for us.
Well, I guess it seems to be a never-ending battle, but there's all sorts of misinformation that's out there that I think is having a huge impact on the gun control debate. Everything from issues about mass public shootings to suicides with guns to how people should behave when they're having to confront a criminal by themselves. You know, a lot of things that have come into focus even more in the last 6 months or so with the coronavirus and with the police being ordered to stand down and people having to depend even more than in the past on themselves to be able to go and defend themselves. But, you know, I think one of the reasons why I did this book is I've come to believe that this election is going to determine the future of private gun ownership in the United States. I know people often talk about saying that this election is the crucial election, but I think this one is really different. And, I'll just give you one simple example, and that is the Democrats from Biden to Kamala Harris to the Democrats in the Senate are promising to get rid of the filibuster. And that may sound like an arcane rule there, but what it's done is require basically bipartisan support to pass any bill.
Right.
Because it's made it so that in order to pass a bill, you've had to get 60 votes. And no party is close to 60 votes right now. And so if you're a Republican and you want to pass a bill, you have to pick up at least a couple Democrats and vice versa. But if they get rid of the filibuster and Democrats take control of the Senate as well as they're expected to take control of the House, then they're going to be able to quickly pass anything. It's just going to be able to go straight through on pure party line votes. And all one has to do is read the Democratic National platform that they just had come out a few weeks ago to get an idea of what's in store for gun issues, everything from mandatory licensing to banning many types of guns, to setting it up so that lawsuits will be brought against gun makers and gun sellers whenever their guns are used improperly. I mean, could you imagine a world where any time a Ford or a General Motors car or Toyota is involved in an accident, that the car companies would be sued for any of the damages that are from that? Well, that's what they're planning on setting up for gun makers.
Right.
You know, it would likely drive them very quickly out of business. And that's just part of it. You know, even beyond the gun issue, but it's going to affect the gun issue, is Biden promises that the first bill that he's going to put forward is going to be on granting citizenship to illegal aliens. You have 22 million some illegal aliens in the United States. And, you know, that would be a big change. He's promising to give statehood to D.C. and Puerto Rico. That would be an additional 4 seats for the Democrats in the Senate. They're promising to ban photo ID requirements for people voting. You know, those would be fundamental changes that would alter forever the political landslide.
Well, and I wonder,
landscape in the United States.
Yeah, and I wonder, Doctor, you know, if the Democrats are kind of operating in a vacuum here. I mean, you've lined out basically their entire, you know, the strategy that you could see moving forward here, and it is monumental for sure. But I mean, does it fly in the face of what Americans are really wanting, especially looking at, you know, the number of NICS checks that have happened? I mean, hitting this all-time high in June of 3.9 million background checks, which is almost doubled from the year before. The fact that more and more people are buying it, you know, more women, more minorities are buying into firearms. People are, you know, in these uncertain times, even prior to the pandemic with the election coming up, more and more people were reaching out and trying to exercise those Second Amendment rights. I mean, are the Democrats just out of touch with that? And are they, you know, are they just executing their own agenda regardless of what the people want?
Well, I think the nation is fairly divided on the gun issue, even despite the changes that have been occurring. Maybe it's closer to 50-50. But I think the Democrats believe that this is their one chance to really go and seize power. And I think what you're dealing with here is they view gun ownership as a threat, in the sense that I've often had people, Democrats on Capitol Hill in Washington, kind of explain to me that gun owners are to Republicans what unions have traditionally been, particularly public sector unions, have been for Democrats. It's been an issue that's motivated people and gotten them there. And, you know, they are willing to do things that in the long run they believe will weaken that. So if they can make it so that they can reduce the percentage of the population that owns guns, then, you know, they think that that will help them in the long run politically. And I think they view this as a chance that they can make many, many fundamental changes to the political landscape. I mean, this is really going to be very radical if they get rid of the filibuster. It's not going to be the types of changes that we've already talked about in terms of legislation, in terms of how the political process works. But they're also going to be able to radically change the courts, which is going to be fundamental to the Second Amendment. So, for example, people talk about the number of circuit court judges that Trump's been able to put on the bench, and he's been able to put 53 on. But what I don't think is appreciated is that he's just been able to bring the courts into rough political balance. The Democrats control the circuit courts for 24 states, as well as the District of Columbia, which is considered by far the second most important court in the country, because
right.
It controls all the regulatory issues.
Right.
You know, if they get rid of the filibuster on a straight party line vote, they're going to be able to change the number of judges that are on different courts. And so they'll be able to ensure the majority that they have right now on the Ninth Circuit, as well as expand the number of circuit court judges on all these other circuits that are out there, and give them majority on all the circuit courts. And, you know, you have about 90,000 cases each year that go to the circuit courts. Only about 80 go to the Supreme Court. So for virtually all the cases, the circuit courts are the final say-so on these things. And beyond that, the Supreme Court's been paralyzed on the Second Amendment issue. You have four justices, the four Democrats on there, who have indicated that they would overturn the Heller and McDonald decisions from 2008-2010. The only thing that those decisions did was say that the government could not completely ban all guns or completely ban all handguns or all rifles. I mean, that's a limited decision for the Supreme Court to make on that. And if you overturn that, and you have four justices right now would overturn that, you know, that would allow governments to completely ban guns. You have four Republicans who want to expand the Second Amendment and make it stronger. But then you have John Roberts in the middle. And the reason why the Supreme Court hasn't dealt with any of the crazy gun laws that are coming out of California or New York or other places is because the four Republicans that would like to take it are worried that just as John Roberts has gone the wrong way on things from religious freedom cases to DACA, immigration issues, to
Obamacare, right?
Obamacare. He would go the wrong way on the Second Amendment cases,
right?
And so really a lot's at stake, because if you get Heller and McDonald to be overturned, then you're going to have states and other localities which are going to be able to just go and ban guns, you know. I'll give you one example from California. California has all sorts of nutty rules that are going to, if they stay in place, effectively ban handguns. One example is this micro stamping. They have this law that requires that the firing pin on handguns be able to imprint a unique code number on the shell casing that's there,
right?
So that it could be, this shell casing could be traced back to the gun that fired it. Nobody's figured out how to do that,
right? The technology's
not there. But even if they did, it would be something that would be easily defeated by just replacing the firing pin or taking a file to it and filing off the information that's there,
right?
But the problem is that right now, guns are grandfathered in, but you give it another 5 years or so, and if nobody's figured out how to do this, then handguns would be banned in California. And then if you don't replace the Democrat majority on the Ninth Circuit, then you're going to end up with a situation where handguns would be banned in California.
Right. Dr. John Lott is our guest, author of the book Gun Myths, Gun Control Myths, How Politicians, the Media, and Botched Studies Have Twisted the Facts on Gun Control. It's available on Amazon.com right now. You can go check it out. You can also see his writings and listen to his interviews over at crimeresearch.org, where he is the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. Dr. Lott, of course, it's pretty obvious that there's not much of a choice when it comes down to presidential politics here. Joe Biden has said specifically that he would come. He was coming for the AR-14s and all the other stuff that he said. And he talked about putting people like Beto O'Rourke in charge of capturing all that. As much as he gets into the middle of the road and says things like, I support the Second Amendment, does that even really have any meaning anymore when they say that? It's just it just appears to me to be nothing more than a simple platitude, that the main goal here, obviously, is to just disarm American citizens.
Right. Okay. Can you help me get one of those AR-14s?
I know.
I'm looking for them.
I've been looking, yeah. It'll complete my collection. If I can get an AR-14, it will complete my collection. Right after the AK, nice. The AK-57. That's the other one that I need, too. So, yeah.
Right. No, I mean, I agree with you. Look, they've been told by pollsters that they have to go and say that they support the Second Amendment. And so, basically, they always say they support the Second Amendment, and then they, you know, support things like appointing judges who would overturn the Heller and McDonald decision, which, as we just said, would allow them to completely ban guns. Well, if they're able to have judges that says that say that the government has the power to completely ban guns, my question is, what does it mean to say that you support the Second Amendment if you think that being able to completely ban guns is consistent with the Second Amendment? What does that mean?
Right, right, exactly. Well, and again, this coming from the guy that gave you that piece of that sage piece of advice that said you don't need a you don't need a handgun. All you need is a shotgun. Just stick it out the window and blast two blasts in the air. That'll keep it. I mean, this is the legal advice from the sharp mind of Joe Biden on this, and it definitely is not working. Dr. Lott, hold the line for us here. Dr. John Lott, our guest, Crime Prevention Research Center, and author of a slew of books, including the perennial More Guns, Less Crime, and the latest work, Gun Control Myths. We'll continue our discussion with him here in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. The Michael Duke Show continues on your home for common sense, liberty-based, free-thinking radio, broadcasting live across the state of Alaska on this, your favorite radio station and or translator around the world at michaeldukeshow.com, and, of course, out on the internet on Facebook at facebook.com/michaeldukeshow/live. If you want to join us in the chat room, that's the place to go. We continue with Dr. John Lott right after these messages.
Our light, our guide, and our trusted friend.
Michael Duke Show.
In the break right now, Dr. John Lott continues with us as our guest. Dr. Lott, I see that you had an interview here recently that was talking about the Kyle Rittenhouse case, and I don't know if you would like to go into that, but I would be interested to get your take on what's going on with that, because there seems to be a bit of, a lot of misinformation and misconceptions. Obviously, he's been convicted before he's even been tried on this situation in the court of public opinion. And I wouldn't mind picking that up on the other side if you are up to that.
Sure, I'd be happy to talk about it.
Okay. As we look at this, the biggest thing is not to grow weary in well-doing. This is a fight, and I would agree with you that this is probably one of the biggest elections that we could possibly be facing, especially when somebody is, it's like the gloves are off. They're no longer kind of beating around the bush about it. They're basically saying they're going to come in and they want to outlaw guns. And they think that that's going to be a winner. And as you said, with the kind of the divisiveness in this 50-50 split across the country, they may have a good shot at it. And with kind of the whole thing about people being, so outraged by President Trump, this might be their one chance to make it happen. Do you think, is that what they're counting on, is just that the hatred of the president will be enough to put somebody in power to be able to eliminate this Second Amendment?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, it may not be the lead issue that they're going to publicly put forward, but it's what they're planning on doing. I mean, one just needs to look at Virginia this year. Virginia, finally, the Democrats have took control of both the houses and the state legislature, and they passed, 12 gun control laws, which are going to make it costly for Virginians to be able to go and own guns. I mean, there's all sorts of restrictions. Virginia went from a relatively liberal state in terms of gun ownership to being one of the more restrictive ones that are there. And, I think they're going to do the same thing for the reasons that we talked about. This is, look, if they get rid of the filibuster, as they're promising, you're going to see the most radical legislation that you've ever seen. And they're going to use it to make it so that they're not going to have to worry about elections in the future. I mean, I wish this wasn't the case, but if you doubt me, just have people read the Democratic National Convention platform that came out. Just just this one of the things we mentioned on guns, that they would allow people to sue gun makers whenever a gun is used improperly. That means every crime, every time there's an accidental shot, any time that a gun is used in an accident, the gun makers themselves would be liable for
that. And on trial,
You know, apply that to any other item in our lives. I mean, we mentioned cars before. I mean, there's like 4.6 million people who are injured in car accidents each year. What would happen to the car industry if every time for those 4.6 million injuries each year, car companies were liable for any of the damages that were there? How long do you think the car industry would be in place? You know, they will go and use statements, say, well, you know, we just want to make sure everybody's protected or what have you. Well, you know, they can go and dress it up any way they want to, but it's pretty clear what the bottom line point is that they're trying to accomplish. And, you know, it just, it's really disappointing.
I was just going to say, ironically enough, this is all a reversal of the PLCAA, which is the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, which had bipartisan support. I mean, when it was passed back in 2005 or something, I mean, it had bipartisan support. Hillary Clinton voted for it. I mean, all these people did it because they understood. I mean, if you got a drunk driver, you don't sue Jack Daniels and Ford Motor Company because somebody abused those products and hurt somebody or crashed and killed themselves. You don't do that because, again, you would put everybody out of business, but that's the underlying motive here.
Right. No, and, you know, and so I think a lot's at stake here. I mean, Democratic Party's gone way to the left on different issues. I mean, I don't think most people doubt that that's the case. And, you know, it's, you know, the irony is at the same time police are being ordered to stand down and you've had cuts in police budgets and you've had basically police being charged with crimes, even though they've acted exactly by the book in different cases.
Right. I'm sorry. We got about 30 seconds here. I'm going to jump back into this here. So hold on a second, Dr. Lott. Dr. John Lott, our guest, again, Crime Prevention Research Center, author of the book Gun Control Myths. Please like this video, share this video, and grab your friends in and bring them in. Don't forget, you can also send them the podcast later on if they miss it, or you can send them links to this video and they can listen to it or watch it as well. Here we go. Welcome back to the program. Dr. John Lott continues with us now, author of the brand new book, Gun Control Myths, also of course, The War on Guns, More Guns, Less Crime. He's also the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, where you can find them at crimeresearch.org. He comes on board to talk with us today about the ramifications of many of these gun control attempts and, of course, of the myths and misconceptions that are furthered by news media outlets, entertainment industries, politicians, and more. Dr. Lott, we mentioned earlier that there has been a huge spike in gun purchases and interest in guns. It even preceded the pandemic problem, you know, because I think people were seriously concerned about the 2020 election. Then, of course, the pandemic hit. People were very concerned about being able to protect their family. Then, we had the BLM and the George Floyd situation, which caused, you know, some cities to essentially burn and 911 calls to go unanswered, with many of them basically saying you're on your own. And there's just been this huge spike in the interest of people purchasing, owning, and using firearms. And that has led to some interesting situations, but probably one of the biggest things that we've seen thus far, one of the biggest shocking things was this attack and this this situation with Kyle Rittenhouse out in the Wisconsin area. And you had some discussions on this here recently, and I wanted to kind of get your take on this shooting because it seems like Kyle Rittenhouse has been convicted before he's even been tried at this point in the court of public opinion, which, of course, with social media and everything is fairly easy. But let's get your take on that, and we'll kind of see where it goes from there.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, we have to wait for more information to come out in the investigation. I can just say, based on the videos that I've seen, that have actually been fairly comprehensive in terms of the initial shot that he took, as well as him being chased and further and additional shots, it seems pretty clear to me that he acted in self-defense. Now, I wouldn't normally advise a 17-year-old to go out there and try to stop looting at places in a neighboring state. But, you know, here you have a kid who, I guess, has wanted to be a police officer for years, has set up a group in order to try to support police officers, you know, he may have been misguided, but his heart seems to have been in the right place. The media bias on this has just been overwhelming. I mean, I can't even imagine why they just quickly go to this notion that he's a white supremacist. I've seen absolutely no evidence on him being in that type of group at all. Just because somebody supports police officers, strongly supports police officers and wants to be a police officer himself, doesn't seem to me, you know, even if people want to go and claim that there's systemic racism in police, which I don't believe is the case or even close, you know, it just is bizarre to go and label this young kid the way that they are. You know, here you have a kid, at least according to videos, who was being chased, apparently had some type of Molotov cocktail or something thrown at him by the first attacker, had his gun trying to be taken away, fired a shot that fatally hit the person. And then the first thing he did was to try to call the police, call 911 to report it. Yeah, that's not the type of actions that somebody who has a guilty conscience is going to engage in.
Right.
And then of course, he's attacked by a mob. I mean, the amount of restraint that this kid showed when he's being, you know, hit by a skateboard, being kicked and other things by other people that are there, I thought, and another person fires a gun at, you know, when Kyle Rittenhouse is running away. It just, you know, he shoots one person who's armed with a pistol. By the way, all these individuals that were attacking him have felony records, apparently. The guy who had the gun, who fired the gun, had a felony record and was illegal for him to own the gun. It just boggles my mind why the initial sympathy in the media is with the people who are the felons there,
right?
Rather than this kid whose goal in life is to go and become a police officer.
Well, this all goes back to that selective media reporting, which you've talked about in the past and recently about how reporting on these incidences, especially after the George Floyd death, that you know, the media is very selective on how they frame this. I mean, the car killing in Seattle and everything else, and I mean, you line out some of these things in several of your recent articles that talk about this. This media reporting just continues to you know, fuel a divide between us with misleading and you know, and omissive information.
Right. Well, I mean, it's the reason why I wrote the book, Gun Control Myths, is just the amount of misinformation in the media on the gun control issue is just overwhelming. But, you know, So here we have a situation where the George Floyd death in Minneapolis, you know, I don't really know anybody who defends the police officer's actions there. The problem is that that's lumped together then with these other shootings of police. And as far as I can tell, it's pretty hard to look at any of these other shootings by police and think that the police behaved improperly. I mean, take what I think I remember is the next police shooting case, and that's in Atlanta, where this guy at the Wendy's restaurant, he was had passed out in his car at the drive-through lane there. The police showed up. They gave him a sobriety test. Anybody who wants to go through and watch the 45-minute video there, the police were extremely courteous. It's hard to think of any two officers who could be more courteous than those officers. I mean, the guy was obviously inebriated, but, you know, he was much larger than either the two officers. He was at least a head taller than either of them, must weigh at least 70 pounds more than either of the officers. And those officers acted entirely by the book. The guy there attacked the officers, was able to steal one of the tasers from one of the officers, fired it, and then was about ready to fire it again at another officer there when that officer shot the individual. And, you know, the prosecutor there in Atlanta has charged the police officer with felony murder. The guy has been lost his job. Apparently, many of his relatives have been fired from their jobs by private employers. You know, it's just bizarre. I mean, right. Here you have an officer, as I say, who did everything by the book, and you have prosecutions like the case of the Kyle Rittenhouse, which I look at this and I kind of wonder whether prosecutors now have just gotten so political that they make decisions on who to file charges based on kind of the political atmosphere rather than the evidence that's there.
Well, that's the McCluskey case in a nutshell, isn't it? I mean, the two people defending their property in their private neighborhood there. I mean,
that's exactly. There you have a prosecutor who's refused to file charges against any of the rioters that the police had arrested. And the police there were only arresting the most egregious cases. Instead, the only people that the district attorney filed charges against were the couple who were defending their property. The rioters had broken down the gate for this private community. The road there is private. It's not a public road. The people were on their property yelling threats. I mean, as far as I can tell, under Missouri law, they behave perfectly legally. Now, the one thing I probably wouldn't have done is the woman pointed her handgun directly at people.
Right.
But as far as I can tell, given that the gun was inoperable, even if it hadn't been on private property, in Missouri, under their law, it would be legal for her
absolutely,
to do that.
Absolutely. Dr. John Lott is our guest. His latest book is called Gun Control Myths. You can find it on Amazon. I've got links up in the chat room. Dr. Lott, as always, my friend, it was a great conversation. Thank you so much for participating today.
No, thanks. There's so much to go through.
Oh, man.
I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. We could have a two-hour conversation on this. Absolutely. I'll hold the line. Back with more of The Michael Duke Show. Dr. Lott, I really appreciate it. I would love to have you back on sometime in the next few weeks if you'd like to come back and discuss it some more. We'd love to have you on semi-regular here coming up into the election season. All right. Well, maybe we'll set you up for next Friday or the Friday after before you jump into the black hole there, and we'll cover it. I appreciate it. Anything, you know, what should people's takeaway be here? I'll give you I got about 3 or 4 minutes here before we got to rejoin the top of the hour. So what should people's takeaway be on this whole thing overall? What have we not covered, or what would you like to leave people with here before we let you go for the weekend?
Well, I mean, I guess what we didn't get into explicitly was the content of the book in terms of kind of the media bias and the impact it has on everything from mass public shootings to other issues. I mean, I hesitate in just 4 minutes to kind of get into this very much. But, you know, let me give you an example on another issue, and that's suicide with guns. One of the things, and I know you and I have talked about the push for red flag laws in Alaska. You know, the claim is that guns are, you know, more successful way for people to go and commit suicide. If you can only take away the gun, then you'll prevent suicides from occurring. And that's simply false. I mean, I'll give you one simple statistic, and that is there have been a number of places in the United States as well as around the world that have banned guns or banned handguns. You would think if that argument were true, you should see significant drops in suicide rates after, you know, Washington, D.C. or Chicago passed handgun bans. And yet you don't see any changes in suicides. They continue on exactly as they were before. And the point is pretty simple, and that is there are lots of ways for people to go and commit suicide. If you doubt that, go and ask Jeffrey Epstein about
it. Right.
But it's just, you know, the claim that you'll see in major media outlets that using a gun is by far the most quote unquote effective way to successfully commit a suicide, unquote, is simply false. There are lots of ways which have very similar, quote, success rates. You know, people taking cyanide, jumping off a building, stepping in front of a truck or a train or a bus that's moving, hanging oneself. Those all have very similar success rates, almost identical to the success rate for people using a gun to commit suicide. And some of those are much less painful ways for people to go and commit suicide. You know, we can go and talk about the red flag laws, but, you know, it's just bizarre that here you have people wanting to set up laws dealing primarily with suicide, where they take mental health care professionals out of the involvement in determining whether or not somebody is suicidal. All the states, including Alaska, already have laws that deal with protection orders, emergency protection orders, if
right.
they think somebody's a danger to themselves or others. But those current laws actually require mental health care professionals be involved in evaluating people. There's a hearing that has to occur quickly. If you can't afford a lawyer, one is provided for you. It often costs $10,000 or more to hire a lawyer for those situations.
Right.
And yet these red flag laws strip people of any involvement by mental health care professionals. They make it so that judges have to make decisions based solely on a complaint with no hearing there. You know, it could be a month before a hearing occurs. And the individuals, look, you may want to keep your guns, but if you have to spend $10,000 to defend yourself, and the only consequence of losing the case is your guns are taken away, I may want to keep my guns, but is it worth $10,000 to me
right.
to be able to do that?
Complete
and
average,
so most
yeah.
people who go through these, and the thing is, the current laws allow judges much more flexibility. They can go and require mental health counseling for an individual.
Right.
They can involuntarily commit them, or they can have voluntary process where the judge follows up and monitors it. But, you know, I'm not even sure most people even realize what the current laws are. The claim is, well, we just have to go and do something. But the way the gun control advocates have set this up is they make it look like the only solution to preventing suicide is to go and take away people's guns.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, those red flags, just a complete abrogation of due process. The presumption of innocence is out the window. You can't defend yourself. It's so many things. Dr. John Lott, I'm looking forward to talking with you again. I will reach back out to you next week, and we'll see if we can get you on next Friday or the following Friday. We look forward to hearing from you.
I appreciate you having me on, talk about my book.
Yep. Next week, next time we get in,
we'll the most important one I've written, but yeah, I appreciate it.
We'll jump into it, and we'll do the full segments next time on the book specifically, and we'll go through it chunk by chunk and get it. And maybe if we can get – if you got a copy you want to send me, we can give it away or something on the air as well. That'll be good. So, all right, Dr. John Lott, Okay. Thank you so much for coming on board. We appreciate it.
We've shed our terrestrial radio skin, and now we are slimy lizard internet people. It's the Michael Duke Show.